talk about the work in progress with Flavio and Enrique and team, which is not here, about the gravitational collapse. So, as Flavio told you, there is a solution found by Enrique in his paper, and which is just the isotropic wormhole solution, and has this nice property of being of avoiding singularities inside that, has the inversion property that Flavio showed with that nice picture. And it's so the Schwarzschild exterior is glued at the float. But the problem with this solution is that one of them is that it's an eternal solution. So we wanted to know how it can be produced by a gravitational collapse. And to do that, we decided to study it by thanks to a Finchel model. So we took a spherically symmetric infinitely thin shell, and we let it evolve and see what happens. So the first step was to take this spherically symmetric ansatz and rewrite all the constraints in using this. Here you can notice there is a delta function for modeling the shell. And this is how the Hamiltonian constraints look like. This is the Diffeo constraint, and this is the conformal constraint, so the maximal slicing requirement. And we were able to solve them and get, for the momentum, the solution for the R component of the metric solution of the Hamiltonian constraint. We get this form. There are four integration constants because we solve them inside and outside the shell, and we will then impose a jump condition to connect them. The next thing we did was to write down all the equation of motion for the metric tensor, its momentum, and the lapse fixing equation, which is the equation that came from requiring that the maximal slicing condition is propagated in time. And so these are all the bunch of equations we had to deal with, and we solved them, got an explicit, more or less explicit form for the lapse, for the shift. And from the equation of motion, we got that we got some constraints on the integration constant that we introduced. So from this preliminary work, we get six integration constants, and the assumption we made for proceeding in our work were the continuity of the metric tensor at the shell, no mass inside the shell, asymptotic flatness at infinity as the first approximation because it's easier to treat things here. Okay, sorry. And then we required the lapse takes value 1 at infinity, and of course the continuity of the lapse. The jump conditions that came from our equation are the one for the Diffeo, for the Hamiltonian, and the lapse fix, and the other equation of motion for the momentum. And they all came from the equation where you have the delta function to deal with. By imposing this condition, you first get that alpha in this particular integration constant is to be zero. And I will show why this is consistent, because indeed, the meaning of alpha is to be the ADM mass, so it's really related to the mass, and it's yeah, it seems good that this
so
value
are
is zero.
The commas between the things on the left-hand side,
yes.
Or is it a product?
No, there are
commas.
Commas. Yeah,
yeah. So it's
just separate.
Five conditions.
Yeah, there are five integration constants left.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay, I haven't read the details of your paper, so I'm just a bit. What do you have a physical interpretation, or at least, like, is there an easy way to think about what alpha is, the C1?
Yes.
And
well, the C1 are the integration constants that came in the lapse. I will show the meaning of.
Do you mind just slowing down?
Yes. Sorry.
When you show an equation, give us time to read the equation.
Sorry. Okay.
So if the C's are zero, the lapse is zero.
Yes. And
but the C's are not allowed. To, I mean, at least C2.
Yes,
C2
is
a relation, an armchair relation with
that.
Yeah.
With A.
Which is dynamical, so it can't be. We can't
zero forever.
Can't just.
And what's A, capital A?
It's a spatial constant.
It's a spatial constant, and through the jump condition of the diffeo constraint is related to the momentum of the shell.
The momentum of the shell.
Yes. The difference A out minus A in is related to the momentum of the shell.
So C2 is like an acceleration or something? Mm.
The derivative of momentum?
Yes.
The difference of the
yes.
Proportional to the momentum, so there's something that depends on the area of the shell, and so it's just not that straightforward. Because,
Yeah, and alpha is conserved, both inside and outside the shell.
Yes. What's alpha?
Alpha is related to the mass. It's, for example, you can analytically show that alpha outside the shell is related to the ADM mass.
ADM mass
of
the shell.
Of the shell. Yeah.
Okay. The ADM mass is the same as
No.
It's conserved.
And inside the shell is zero, and outside the shell it takes alpha.
Okay, that's good.
So in A in and out
can be also associated to the moment, the gravitational momenta inside and outside. Mm-hmm. Right. The difference is the moment of the shell, but related to the moment of the shell. Are also related to the gravitational momenta inside.
Can I show the two slides before?
Before?
Here.
Yeah.
The radial component.
The radial component of the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reduced base space. So, you said that the thing is a conformal geometry is a flux, right? Now with the thin shell, so that's what I know. But now with the thin shell, the only thing that's added is, I guess, the momentum, the location of the shell and its momentum.
Yes. That's
the only degree of freedom. So there's one kind of shape of freedom.
It's not shape, it's scale, but yes, there's one degree of freedom.
Something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's R?
Yeah.
What do you guys call it?
Bro.
So. We call it rho, which is since it's the tilatera component of the metric tensor evaluated at the shell. It's the area of the shell. A in and A out are related to the momentum by the difference, and I also related to the momentum of the metric tensor. And A out I will show in further slides that is the ADM mass, while A in has to be alpha in, sorry, has to be fixed to zero to having for to not having any mass inside the shell. The only relation that we have on these quantities is this on shell relation that we get from the jump condition and the assumption we made. And so here we have four variables related by an equation and the knowledge that alpha out is a constant. And if we put them together, we find that the system is underdetermined because we don't have a one-dimensional curve as a solution, but we have a two-dimensional manifold. So we can say that in the end, we are left with the freedom of fixing A out, and I will talk about this problem.
What I find interesting, and it's not necessarily a criticism, but that you end up with the ADM mass all the way rather than Born-Yorck. And Born-Yorck somehow seems to be more natural in all these spherically symmetric things. I was just wondering why it is that it's the ADM mass that you end up with rather than the Born-Yorck.
So, I mean, in fact, so the ADM mass that we end up with is in a particular conformal gauge also. I mean, there's also this fact, right?
Yeah.
We can have a slight generalization.
Yeah, since we are solving directly the constraints.
We haven't checked Born-Yorck.
Because it seems to me to be much more natural than all these circuits. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you remind what
basically, what happens is that at the horizon it becomes 2F. It is not a constant. It goes from one M at it agrees with the area mass at infinity and increases smoothly to 2m at the boundary, at the horizon.
So this comes from having finite boundary conditions out and out of the finite boundary conditions on some surface.
But then area mass isn't a value that is something that makes any sense anyway, if you don't have infinity.
Sure. No, I agree with you that ground Europe is more physical.
Yeah.
But in this, my guess is that in the spherically symmetric case, specifying ground Europe, which requires fixing some boundary condition at some finite radius, is equivalent to fixing the AVM mass.
Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yeah, certainly
so that could be expressed in terms of ground.
We should probably discuss this again once you've seen what we've done in the compact case.
Yes.
So, just a question on the show. Could you go back to the previous one? Yeah, what is the meaning of that last equation? The product of those things is zero?
I left the.
So alpha 1 is 0.
Alpha 1 is the only constant that is 0, and we are left with this other constraint to fix.
Okay, that was confusing.
Anyway, here you get the three-dimensional radius space. That was the line of this. Instead of two-dimensional, as you expect from a system that has only radius and its conjugate momentum.
The interpretation we give to this is that since we are working with asymptotically flat, spherically symmetric object, we know that the outside is just virtual spacetime, and we are imposing maximal slicing. But maximal slicing is not unique; it has different foliation. These are the two foliation that propagate this particular slice at t equals zero, and indeed, these are the foliation that we are getting, because, for example, if we put, this is the isotropic foliation.
Yeah, that's right.
And this other one is the.
That's right. And they're different.
Okay. Can I ask a question? Are those the actual slicings that you get if you vary one of these integration constants, or is this just a cartoon?
This is. If you're saying that, I think I understood. And this is the isotropic one, and we get it by fixing A out equals zero. This other one, we are getting this as well, because
you get that when we're varying A out from minus infinity to plus infinity.
That's what you're getting
from zero to infinity, actually.
I can show you this by showing the line element.
It's by the value of A out.
So how much can you move that foliation up? Can you move it all the way up to the singularity?
No, I can move it up to three halves.
It doesn't reach a singularity.
So this
stops at three. Another family starts at r equals zero, goes back to r equals zero inside that. Okay. This is only got the ones that go to infinity, but you've got two families.
That's
right.
So in our thing, also this is kept off by the shell. Remember that there's a shell here that doesn't allow it.
That's right. GR. This one. There's only half of the maximum slices, especially symmetric maximum slices, shown. Go from r equals zero back to r equals zero inside r equals two half there. But you get both.
And these are the corresponding four-dimensional line element, the isotropic one, and the foliation, the non-static line element in which this function of the coordinate time C plays the role that alpha out is playing. And since these two solutions are connected by a four-dimensional diffeomorphism, in general relativity there is no ambiguity, actually. We interpret this as an ambiguity in shape dynamics, because as Flavio was saying before, shape dynamics rests on the notion of a preferred notion of simultaneity, and the transformation allowed to connect two solutions are three-dimensional diffeomorphism and three-dimensional conformal transformation, and those two solutions are not connected by them. So from Shapenomics point of view, they are different solution, and we are left with the question of on how to fix a out. And the answer that we are trying to give is by studying the rest of the universe. So what we did was to introduce a twin shell model on a compact case. Yes.
Yeah, let me just take a shot at it. The isotropic case is symmetric on a time reversal, but the collapsing the other case is not symmetric on a time reversal, but the collapsing shell breaks time reversal, so it picks out the non-isotropic cases and you're done. Mm.
The non-isotropic case is invariant too on the time reversals.
But the collapsing shell picks out the direction of time mm-hmm. in a way which favors those over the others. Can you make an argument like that?
Why does it favor one of the two positions?
So,
well, we pinned it down, but I'm not sure I understand your question.
Okay. So, no. Maybe it's wrong.
Yeah. You think you...
I think there is a point, I mean, I think I understand what, if you think about it just heuristically, it is true that it's not completely, even if the shell goes through the horizon, it's true that it's not completely time symmetric because it caps off the isotropic solution on the other side of the throat. And I mean, there is a reason, and Tim prefers the solution with An equals, and the other one with An equals zero, basically. But then we have other problems, and we need to really study the solution in conformal superspace, which we haven't been able to.
Let me challenge all of that. I think that you won't find that the shell really picks a time direction, because you can always evolve backwards in time the same solution, and you would find at some point a point of time reversal symmetry, and then the thing will evolve past that. This is something, a way of thinking that I've trained myself into Jungian recently. I will.
But there is a fundamental difference between the two of them. And if n goes to zero, as it does in the isotropic case, then the thing freezes at that point.
Yes.
So while the one which isn't the non-isotropic one, n doesn't go to zero anywhere, and so you do get dynamics all the way. And I think that's the fundamental difference between the two.
Yes, indeed. But I don't think he breaks the
No. It's not. It's a question of one of them stops at that horizon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The evolution, because when n goes to zero, it starts up again. While the other one just keeps on going through.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is whichever one you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, maybe it's worth pointing out, like, what are we going to talk about that and how we should interpret these different maximum slices, or we should say that for later.
He has only 15 minutes to do 27 slides.
Some
approximate number.
And we have another whole
slot.
So what we did to try to resolve this question was to look for the simplest model in that we had at disposal, at our disposal in a compact case. And we started a twin shell model. So we put two thin shell on a free sphere. And well, we had to put two of them for different reasons. For example, if you only put one, you would have that the sphere cannot be compact anymore because you would have a mass inside that. So since we want, also in this case, that there is no mass inside the shell, but we have the jump condition that fixes the mass, that relays the mass inside and the mass outside, we had to put two of them so that the analogous of the ADM mass would be only in this region in the belt. And yeah, it also makes sense from a relational point of view. We are studying, what we want to do is to study the southern shell once we take some limit of the northern shell and use that as a model for the rest of the universe. So we did the same work we did in the thin shell for a compact case, and we were able to, we brought down the Hamiltonian and the other constraints, And they look more or less the same apart from the presence of the York time and the cosmological constant, and of course true delta function. And now the maximal slicing foliation is the CMC foliation, since we are in compact. And we solved the constraint as we did in the asymptotically flat case, and we got solution that looks more or less the same. For example, this that was the momentum component multiplied by the square root of the R component of the metric tensor is the same plus this contribution due to the York time, and here is the R component that we that also resembles the previous one with just York time and cosmological constant. The on-shell relation coming from the jump conditions now turns into two on-shell relations, one for each shell. Here I just define what the quantities are. So rho is the area of the shell as it was before. The idea now is, let's count the degrees of freedom. We have the area of the southern shell, the area of the northern shell, this integration constant. Now A south and A north are fixed to be zero, since we don't want any mass inside the shell. Alpha of the belt is constant because it's conserved by the equation of motion, like it was in the initial case. So in the end, we end up with 4 matter degrees of freedom and 2 scale degrees of freedom, and the system is completely determined. There is no ambiguity in the compact description.
But do you have a unique solution?
Of
the system.
Well, we don't have the dynamics yet.
We don't have a dynamics yet. But even solving the constraints.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No, you get 2 solutions per, it's a double surface. And one is as a positive. Just for the accounting of the physical degrees of freedom, because it's interesting.
So, the 2 on-shell relations and this, for these other 2 requirements of not having any mass inside the shell, leave us with 10 minus 4, which is 6 degrees of freedom. And 2 of them are like rho south, rho north, south north are for the shell, and then we have the York time and the volume, which is conjugate to it for the whole universe, like scale degrees of freedom.
Yeah. I like this system, this model, because it's really like the minimal model which has a meaningful shape degrees of freedom. It's like the 3-body problem.
Yeah.
Yes, besides the planar 3-body problem. Yeah. It has 6 scale degrees of freedom, which turn out to be 4 Hamiltonian shape degrees of freedom, which is the 2 angles of a triangle if you want. So it's nice.
This is genuinely new, is it, Fabio? You're not aware of anybody. I mean, I do think this is potentially very nice.
I don't. I haven't found it in the literature. That doesn't mean that no one did it.
I find it very surprising. I find it very hard to believe that someone has done it. I haven't done it, and none of my friends have done it. So,
so that problem is solved.
You're saying that they're not friends.
Yeah, of course not.
But he's an example person.
Enemies, yeah, kill.
So to get a condition on the Affine shell, what we do is we take the limit an going to infinity, and it will be more clear later why we take this large A approximation. And what we do is to solve each of the coefficient of an in these 2 on-shell relations. And we set them equal to 0, and we solve for these variables, like rho n, alpha of the belt, and A of the belt. And what we do is, since we in the limit t going to zero, so in late early time limit or late time limit, the volume of the free sphere is divergent.
What t is
this combination of York time and cosmological constant. So at the the edge
zero
of the time boundary of the of the universe, the volume diverges. And we are taking that at another, of course, requirement for having the asymptotically flat approximation of this. So we take the limit t going to zero, which is York time going to the boundaries of these two solutions we found. And in one case, we have that the northern shell goes to infinity. The ADM bus inside the belt goes to zero. And we are discarding the solution and taking the other solution in which the northern shell just asymptotically goes to its horizon. And we have a non-zero value for the mass of the belt. So this is the graphical picture of what we are doing, saying, sending the northern shell to the horizon and taking only this southern hemisphere as our whole universe, imposing asymptotically flat condition here. And we can do that by having, deriving. You were saying?
So can I go back and slide? No, so just to make clear what we're doing here is that we want to have some solution of one of the shells. Suppose we don't see it or it's really far away or is it representing the rest of the universe somehow. And we want conditions on it to induce or to fix these leftover conditions that we have for the solution here, because it is fully determined in the closed case. So we're supposing one instance of or one physical condition, maybe of these other of these what the rest of the universe is doing, that will induce conditions on this shell.
I'm not claiming that this is the solution.
No.
It's just to illustrate
it's
how
a way in which you can get at least this
condition
particular condition.
So, for example, maybe taking the limit of an to infinity. I don't know what physically exactly it means. What at least I think it means at the moment is that it would be something strange, like the kinetic energy of the other shell is going to infinity.
We have a reason to take this limit.
Okay.
At least, yeah, sorry.
Can you take t going to zero, keeping n not finite?
Can we go?
No.
But it's not funny. Mm.
Yeah.
That was the first thing we were doing, and you know when you take something going to infinity, you get a set of equations at each order. And they were, I didn't like them.
We didn't study them very thoroughly.
This is really.
So this is tractable, taking the first thing to infinity and then taking t to zero is tractable.
Yes, at the moment. But that's really pretty.
I like it because it's a proof of principle that you can actually do what you know, we were paying lip service to before, which is sort of like. Fix the ambiguity about the maximal slices that you get in asymptotically flat by something physical, by how the kind of co-moving observers inside that, those maximal slices are moving relative to the rest of the universe. So I like that.
Let's let me finish because we'll justify the AN goes to infinity.
So yeah, for this one we are taking that A bar became our previous A out. And we can have an ADM mass which is non-zero, because in this limit we can guarantee that. Yeah, the other reason why, if we took this other solution, then the ADM mass would go to zero, and we would be forced to have no mass outside. So we go back to the thin shell and study the reduced phase space imposing A out equals zero, and we studied the phase diagram, and here I can see that. There are two different situations described here. One is in which, this diagram has as axis rho, which was just the area of the shell, and the AN, constant, and it the one that is related by the Diffeo constraint to the momentum. And we see that when the shell freezes, when the dynamics freezes, AO diverges to infinity, because this is this diagram has been done by compactifying infinity. So all the borders here are, for example, here is A in infinity, A in infinity, and here is A, rho infinity. And we have two different situations, one in which the area of the shell diverges, so the shell is escaping, and one in which the area of the shell is bounded from below and from above. And in both cases, asymptotically, we have that AN is diverging. And this is the reason why here we took the limit AN going to infinity, and seeing indeed we get that AN going to infinity is compatible with the rho north going to the horizon. We first noticed this in the thin shell, and then look for the analogous in the twin shell model and use that to justify this assumption.
I'll give you another
3 minutes. Okay, so yeah, here we just made a, I can skip this, it's just to show that if you study the symplectic potential, you get that R and P are the conjugate variable for the thin shell. And here's how to show that alpha is related to the ADM mass that we have said that before. And since alpha plays the role of the ADM mass, we are going to use that to generate the Hamiltonian equation of motion for the shell. So that we would need alpha as a function of large R and large P, but we cannot have it because here we have a down-shell relation which only is expressed in terms of rho and A. We can impose the isotropic gauge and get the relation between the area of the shell and the position through the layout. And then there is how the jump condition of a Diffeo constraint looks like in this particular gauge.
So just to recap, we had the A and the alpha and rho degrees of freedom, which were really gauging
bias, yes.
Integrals over the momentic degrees of freedom. Now we choose a gauge to find out the actual equations of motion, to switch from A rho and A rho to large R, which
large
are
B.
Literally, you know, the
where the shell is,
where the shell is in
its moment.
So we can, step forward.
We found out that it was easier not to solve this system, but instead working with the differential and directly get the equation of motion. So we took the differential of every constraint, solved them, and got the out as a function of large R, large P, and A out itself. But since it is constant, because it's preserved by the equation of motion, we solved the initial value problem for that, and did some simulation. And here is, for example, what we get. We get that the shell starts at some fixed value, and it asymptotically goes to the horizon in the asymptotic picture. These are the momentum, which is diverging, and the velocity, which is going to zero as the shell approaches the horizon.
So the shell doesn't cross the horizon?
Not for this particular.
For this particular choice of layout, it doesn't. In the limit.
This is the isotropic slice. That's the other slicing does across the horizon.
We are working on that simulation.
You can't just impose it. It has to come out of.
It has to come out from.
So what impulsive force is keeping it from crossing the horizon? Is it the isotropic gauge condition?
It's the fact that the foliation never crosses.
Yeah,
the
never.
Right. So it's a gauge issue.
So
in GR you can call it a gauge issue. One of the
interpretations that we have for this physically is that by taking here for ship dynamics, York time should be a physical time, and if you take this time
for asymptotically flat, there's a what we call basically, because York time doesn't make sense in these infinite volume universes, when it's asymptotically flat universes. When you're taking this infinite time reparametrization, basically, that would be what is responsible for the freezing of the shell, responsible for an infinite time at the shell being compatible with a finite time at some other point. If you had a compact universe, at least that would be the conjecture. If you truly had a compact universe, for any finite York time, it would actually be going through the horizon. And it's an effect of this infinite time reparametrization that you take for asymptotically flat. This is a conjecture at the moment. The other solution seems to have different properties completely.
These different solutions are imposing different conditions on how the two shells are moving relative to each other.
For example, you see this shell, for example, it's forming another black hole, right? Yeah. I mean, at least that's we think it is happening.
And so the way it should be interpreted, like somehow, if you're in this universe where there's only two shells, like measure time? I mean, how do you measure time in this universe anyway? And how do you measure shape and distance? Maybe it just seems like the best you can do is make time measurements where this thing freezes out or something. And whereas the other solution would be, so GRE would just interpret it as going to different foliations, but in shape dynamics, they're really different physical situations.
That's the point.
The rest of the universe is doing different things.
Would you interpret it that way?
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, I just wonder whether you aren't still nearly free enough from the space-time picture in total. Let's just make a comparison of the three-body problem. We have two shape trees of freedom. We have just a curve in shape space, which a curve in shape space looks like nothing. But what we have is
I'm hearing your passcode for
we know by how we've set up the problem, we know what each point on that curve means. It means a shape of a triangle. And as we go along that curve, we see how the shape changes. And it goes through where it's, say, more or less like an equilateral triangle, and it goes down to darts at the two ends. And there's absolutely no shadow of doubt about the interpretation. We're completely free of Newtonian pictures except for the shape of the triangle. And I suspect one should do something here. If there are two, you should have the intuitive picture of what the shape is that you're describing. What are these two Lagrangian shape degrees of freedom? The shape ones that you've got, and your history is just how those change. And it seems to me what you need is the intuitive picture of what that actually means. And that's interpretation. And forget all the stories about blackouts and anything like that. It's just about how the shape of that thing goes. So I think if there really are two genuine shape degrees of freedom, we really have got here the shape dynamic analog with truly, we haven't assumed infinite space, anything like that. We've got just what we want, and we just need to understand how that changes, and then that's the interpretation. And we come in with completely free of this baggage of general relativity.
So the equations are hard.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. But maybe.
Yeah, but we need to sort them out.
No,
yeah.
Sure.
But I mean, maybe you could begin to do something with computer simulations. But the very first step seems to me, I want to see a curve. And I want to be told what each single, there's just one curve, you have a dependent, you can regard it as a dependent variable and an independent variable, and I want to know just the physical picture, the ontology of what corresponds to each point on that curve. And then I think we will know what this thing is doing.
Andrea will work that out during the
coffee
break. That's just a super quick question.
Yeah, it's very basic because I'm new to all of this. I'm just wondering, so is it wrong to think analogously to like just normal GR case where you never cross the boundary because of timing relation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it similar to this?
An observer exterior to the shell
will never
really observe it.
Is that here why it doesn't
redshift?
So that's why it doesn't cross here?
Yeah, if you want, but it's again in GR it's a foliation dependent or a simultaneity notion dependent statement.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what related to what I was saying, right? It doesn't cross related to an observer at infinity, a static observer at infinity.
But this static observer at infinity is something that only exists in these asymptotically flat approximations. So for a finite one, the conjecture is that yes, indeed it will cross, but we haven't worked it out because it's for working things out for closed universes is complicated. You need at least two shells to make sense because otherwise the equations don't work. And
there will be plenty of time to discuss precisely these things during the emission scope. So let's thank you.